Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Aria Vote Huddle Call. Today is Tuesday, January 27th. This is Chris Chico, and Gary is traveling today, so I'm not sure if he is going to be able to come. Likely not. So going to go over just some housekeeping items, and then I have one topic of discussion that I wanted to bring up, and then after that, we will open up the call for open dialogue, question, answer, et cetera. So again, a couple of this call is scheduled to go for an hour. It could be less if we don't have dialogue at the end or we run out of questions to ask. A couple of different email addresses. A couple things. So I'm going to unmute everybody in a short bit. So if you have any background noise, just go ahead and mute yourself. If I spot background noise, then I will go ahead and mute you from this end. It's better for you to mute yourself here in the console, then I may not have a chance to go back, and so then you'll be permanently muted. I'll give you instructions on how to mute yourself, but it's just easier if you mute yourself if you have a lot of background noise. Couple things is to mute yourself, hit *6, and you can hit *6 again to unmute yourself. I'm going to have the line open. However, if you wanted to raise your hand and ask a question, you can just speak, whenever somebody else is done, or you can hit *5. *5 will raise your hand. Now you can hit *5 again, and it'll lower your hand. So *5 to raise or lower your hand, *6 to mute and unmute yourself. A couple of different email addresses, support@salesteamlive.com. Anything related to your campaigns, your podio, technical things in nature, tech support, support@salesteamlive.com, aria.com, that goes directly to myself and Gary. If you have a question about a deal, situation, circumstances, need to review some paperwork, whatever that may be, dealhelp@aria.com, and suggestionbox@aria.com is the email address if you have any suggestions on things we can do better, things we can change. Last week, Gary announced the text messaging and rolling that out to some beta testers. And some people actually sent in emails to suggestion box. With suggestion box and gave us some additional insight as of things and capabilities we can add to the SMS function once we get it rolled out in its entirety with the group. And so anything they like that, please to let us know. And as always, when you're asking a question, always better to ask your question by just let us know your question first or what you're trying to answer and then give us a backstory, because that way I can listen in knowing the backstory or at least what you're trying to figure out, and I can listen to the call and to your question in that regards. So I had just one item of discussion, and we've had to, obviously we set up REI Vault to help and assist and bring all of us together, right, and to be able to kind of as a shared service. And as you guys know, we do also internal deals, so we also run our market predominantly South Florida market. And recently, one of the things that we do is we have all the calls recorded. So what's set up with the our internal team is we have one acquisitions manager. Actually, let me back up. So I'm actually violating my own rule. So before I tell you the backstory, what I want to express to you guys is the importance of having your calls recorded, of that whoever is doing, if you have somebody else on your staff, whoever's calling the sellers, having those calls recorded and listening to them so you can spot any sort of issues that come up. So on our team, we have an acquisitions manager, and then he's flanked by two VAs. And the VAs, when the sellers call in, they if we don't have enough information, the VAs will call the sellers, gather additional information. And then also we're using the VAs to make some soft offers. Kind of feeling the seller out by making kind of an offer, seeing where they stand, what their direction is, and then at that point, then Steve, our acquisition manager, would get involved. And, over the last 30 days, it's been kind of lackluster, the results. We've been doing deals, but we feel that, you know, with the things we got going on, that we should be doing more deals. And so then I began to just, I was a bit slacking on, you know, listening to the calls. And part of that was because people, the VAs were the ones who were making the calls. They were dropping the calls into a folder in their hard drive, which then synced to Google Drive. And so for me to listen to the call, I'd have to kind of go through particular, you know, a certain number of calls and not really knowing what the call was about or if anything was really discussed on the call that was of significance. And so that was a challenge. And so one of the things we did is that we had started to have the VAs or whoever it is that's going to be doing the calls for you, once they finish a call with a seller and there was any sort of meaningful conversation, not a call where somebody left a message or a rather short call, but rather when they had some sort of dialogue with the seller. Could be that they just called to gather additional information about the seller. Could be that they just made a preliminary offer to the seller. And so what we've been having them now, we transitioned over the last couple of weeks, is to them taking the time right then and there to name the call, first name and kind of a two- or three-word description of what the call was about, and then upload it to the Podio record for that seller. And then that way, when we're discussing a deal, then first of all, we can listen into the call so we can kind of get an idea of what the seller said, you know, and how the call went. But at the same time, it allowed us when the virtual assistants were telling us, hey, I talked to the seller and here's what he said, and it's not really a deal or the circumstances or whatever, it would allow us to actually take and, you know, just zero in on that particular lead, listen to the call, and then see if, you know, what the VA was telling us is accurate. You know, could that call have gone another way? And so over the course of the last couple of weeks, I've been listening as we're on our team huddle calls that we have every day. When they would mention a deal that we discussed as a group, then I would save the URL for Podio. Then later on, I would listen to the call. And so really what came down to it is that over the last couple of this week, we ended up letting go one of the VAs. We kept one. And then now Steve, our acquisition manager, is going to be speaking with the seller from beginning to end. So from the moment that the call comes in, and even if it's just to call them to gather additional information, Steve is going to be the one that's going to be calling those people. And the one VA is just going to be a support role, writing up contracts. The VA that we have is somewhat kind of an organized VA. They're detail-oriented, and so they're also going to kind of be making sure that Steve is organized. But the VA is no longer going to be making calls to the sellers. All the calls are going to be with Steve. And yes, that's going to kind of eventually create a bandwidth problem with Steve, and then we might either have to split up the markets or figure out another way. But I just don't think that right now the Filipino VAs, they were just not doing a good job. They were missing cues. You know, when you speak with a seller and you have that conversation with them and that dialogue over the phone, you know, it's a fluid. It's kind of like I think of it like a boxing match. You know, you come out with this plan, but as soon as you get in the ring and they start throwing punches at you, you're going to have to improvise. You're going to have to kind of move move around the ring as the situation dictates. And that's one of the things that we are looking at. Also, you know, they just weren't, they had gone through my training materials and they'd gone through my ejection handling course, but they still just, you know, even though they had been doing this for a certain number of months, I just hadn't seen the progress that I was expecting. And I didn't think that further training, even if we took and spent 3 or 4 hours additional in training and working through objections, I was concerned that that still would get them, it would get them a little bit better, but only marginally better, and not certainly enough to where they needed to be, especially in a market like South Florida with a lot of competition and we really got to have our game on. And so then, you know, in essence, what we've done is now Steve is the point of contact from beginning to end. Another challenge that we had, that we've never had this issue, and I couldn't figure out why, and I think it was because of this, is that we had a lot of sellers that would just ask us for credibility questions. You know, who are you people? I want to know, you know, is there a website? You know, are you registered with the Better Business Bureau? And a lot of questions that we normally would never have gotten. And I think that was because, you know, the way the VAs came across, it was different than the way Steve comes across. And he's just, you know, he's a U.S.-based guy, and so obviously, and he knows how to sell. And so he's able to build rapport with the sellers. And I think that the issue we were having, and that's not to say that you shouldn't have a credibility side and you shouldn't, we're in the process of rebuilding our credibility side with the sellers. But, you know, we were getting a lot of that. And I think that was because the call, you know, the seller came in, spoke with the VA. The VA was good, but not certainly as sharp as Steve. And then the call maybe going back to Steve and then maybe going back to the VA. There was a lot of back and forth, and I think that continuity of having that one person all the way from beginning to end. And, you know, even if you think about it, one of the key things that we're having the VAs do was gather additional information, you know, just simply because to try to figure out if the lead is viable or not. And, you know, the part of, you know, if you think about it, that first call, even if it's just to gather information, you know, sets the tone for the whole process. And so, you know, if the seller doesn't get a good vibe on that first call, then we may not get a chance. And I think that, yes, we have deals on the table that we're doing, that we have pending closings, et cetera. But I think that there's a lot of deals that we missed and a lot of opportunities that, you know, we didn't have a chance just simply because, you know, because of that, because the VAs were just not coming across correctly. They were, you know, they just weren't able to have that dialogue that needed to build a rapport with the sellers, et cetera, that somebody that's a U.S.-based salesperson would have. And so I had to let go of one of the VAs, keep one, and I just restructured the whole thing. And I think, I really believe that this is going to definitely increase our deal flow. And so I wanted to share that with you guys because, you know, part of this process is you learn by doing things that work well, obviously, and you have your successes, but sometimes you learn just as well with your mistakes or errors that you make, and you make adjustments from that. Obviously, you want to minimize your mistakes and errors, but however, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, you only know until you try, and it doesn't really work as exactly as you plan. And so that's the main thing I wanted to share with you guys about our change that we had internally. And so the two main things to walk away from is that if you are having someone else make the call for you, then I think the call should be recorded. And to make it easy for you to audit that is you should have those calls immediately uploaded to the Podio record for that seller so that if you needed to go and look at that, then you would be able to quickly, easily just download the file, listen to the call, and then make a determination if that person you're having make calls for you is someone that is that's doing a good job or not. And that was the one item that I wanted to chat with you guys about. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to open up the call. Brenda, before I open up the call, Brenda, if you're on the call, go ahead and hit *5 so I know where you're at. And that way I could also bring you in. I'd like to be able to discuss the email that you sent in to for deal help and give you some advice, and I think it would be easier if I do it on the call. Although if you're not here, then obviously I will you're not going to hear this, and I will send you an email. But *5 raises your hand. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody right now, and I see you there, Brenda. So I'm going to bring in Brenda first. How do I unmute? Oh, here it goes. Brenda, is that you, 6579?
Yeah, that's me. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm good. So, one of the things I wanted to ask you, because you had sent the content, because what you're trying to figure out is on that deal is whether or not you got it at a good price or not so you can pitch it to the other investors. Is that kind of where we're at with that right now?
Yes, because there were low comps that I didn't see before I made my offer. I'm now worried that, you know, that offer might have been too high. So I did talk to a couple investors last night and they indicated they were interested. They're buy and hold guys. So they're interested in the cash flow property. But they have not come back to me yet with their price. So I'm kind of up in the air.
Well, you know, on a property like this, where it's going to be a cash flow property, and we, most of the deals that we sell ourselves internally, are mostly cash flow deals. And with cash flow deals, typically, we don't look at the comps as much as perhaps if we were evaluating a deal that somebody was going to buy, fix, and flip. And I'm not sure if you've listened to this particular call I'm going to mention. If not, then I can send you the link so that you can listen to it. But there was a call that we had where I discussed making offers based on ROI and not necessarily the comps. Is that a call that you ever listened to or no?
It doesn't ring a bell. I listen to a lot of them, but I don't think so.
Okay. So I'll give you – what I'll do is that I'll respond to the ticket that you sent in with the link to that call, but I'll tell you what the big picture and the summary of that call is. But I think you should still listen to it. In Miami, I'll use the example of Miami. So typically in Miami, most of the deals we're selling are cash flow deals. And so we always calculate – our offer price based on an ROI number. And to just make it easier for us, we always work off of gross ROI. So as an example, let's say that we had a property that was $1,000 a month in rent, and multiply that by 12 is $12,000. So that's gross, right? We're not taking expense or anything like that. And let's say that the seller on that property was asking $50,000. So I take that 12,000 divided by 50, and I get a number of 0.24. So that means that that property at that price is offering me a 24% ROI, cash on cash. And so then now I know that in Miami, depending on the neighborhood, generally if I can get a deal where I can offer to an investor at 18%, 19%, 20% ROI, I know I can sell that deal. So as an example, let me give you a different example. Let's say that rent $1,000 a month, multiply that by 12, and let's say that the seller, in this case, was asking $80,000 for the property. So if I do divide it by 80,000, I only get 15%. So I know in that deal, I say to myself, well, right now at the current rent and what the seller's asking, he's asking a 15% ROI. For me to sell it, I know that investors in Miami want 18%. So that means that I can't pay $80,000. So I have to adjust my price so that perhaps I can pick it up at 22% ROI, and then be able to then offer that to investors in the area for say 18 or 19%. So I'm working the numbers really by analyzing the rent, and not necessarily the comps. And so the thing that you want to find out in your market as the same thing in Miami is, what is that ROI that investors are looking for? So generally, you know, is to talk to these cash flow investors and say, you know, cash on cash, what generally is a good deal for you? You know, forget about expenses, but if a house is renting for $800 a month, right, where would you ideally like to be at on that property, considering that, you know, and have them give you some input. So then they might come back and say, you know what, a house for at $800 a month, and I would need to buy, I'm just using an example, I would need to buy that house at $20,000. Let's just say they say that, $20,000. So 800 times 12 divided by $20,000, that gives me, that's really high. That's not a good example. 800, let's say that they said 40,000 as an example. 800 times 12 divided by
100.
Huh? So let's say 800 times 12 divided by 40 is 24%. So if an investor told me that if a house is rented for 800 a month, then he would need to buy that at 40, and that's a 24% cap. And that means that when I then now talk to sellers, I get to pick that house up at 26, 27, 28% cap. So then that way I can take a little bit off the top and still offer it to my investors for the 24% that they're looking for. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that actually helps a lot. And I sat here and calculated my numbers while you were talking. So now
okay.
I know where I'm at, and I can go back to these cash flow investors and find out where they need to be. And I might have to go back to my seller and take a little off the top. I don't know. We'll see. But that definitely helps.
Yeah, that's how we always do it. And it's just the trick is just figuring out where your investors are. And that percentage is going to change also depending on the neighborhood. You know, there's some neighborhoods where an investor would need 18% only because it's an A-plus neighborhood. There's some neighborhoods that they might need 25 or 30% because it's really, really bad. You might have some neighborhoods where the investors will tell you, you got to give it to me at almost nothing because it's just a really tough area. Now, those areas you might want to then eventually you might say to us, hey, I don't want to nail in that particular area because nobody wants a deal there. So part of the process is figuring those numbers out. So then that way, as you make the offers to the sellers, now you have a better handle on things and you can make the right offer, or at least, you know, in the beginning, and then be in a position where you have a chance to sell it. But what I'll do is I'll make a note of it here after the call that I will send an email to you to that ticket that you submitted with the link to the call that we had on that, and that way you can listen to that, and it'll give you just further insight into what I just mentioned here.
Well, that's great. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. All right, so I have the line open, so it's open pretty much for anyone to chime in or ask any questions.
Yeah, hey, Chris, this is Todd. Just a quick question for you on recording those calls. What tool is it that you guys use to do that with the VAs?
Well, you know, it just depends. It depends on whether or not it's a Mac or Windows. All the calls are made through Skype. So regardless if you are on Mac or Windows, the calls are made through Skype. We set up a Skype manager account. So not your regular Skype, but you can set up a Skype manager account, which then allows you to buy numbers and then give them to the whoever it is that you have calling. And the benefit to that is if you're using somebody's personal Skype account, then you can't really look at the call logs because it's their own personal call. However, if I give them their number through my Skype manager account, I can pull a report and I can see the number of calls they made, the length of the calls, and I can see a lot of detail. So that's number one. So number two is we use a program which we can I can send a link to this, but it's called Teleplay Skype Recorder. If you do Teleplay Skype Recorder, then the let me see here. Actually, let me look at something here real quick. I look at it on my computer because I have it on my computer. Okay, it's Replay Telecorder for Skype. Replay Telecorder for Skype. And it's like a $35 program. There you go. Yeah, the first, if you do Replay, what I just mentioned there, Replay Telecorder for Skype for Windows, that's the one that we use. If you have a Mac, then if you go to a website called ECAM, ECAM with two M's, so it's ECAMM.com, that's the recorder that you would use if you were using a Mac computer.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chris.
And then the other thing is just a USB headset. So just because you need something with good quality. It doesn't have to be an expensive headset. But if you look in an Amazon, I'll tell you which is the one that we buy for our staff. It's a Sennheiser, Sennheiser, PC36. And you could buy that on Amazon, relatively inexpensive. I think it's inexpensive considering, you know, I have a $200 microphone on my desk that I record, like, you know, webinars and stuff like that. But for this purpose, it's $45. So, but it's a good quality headset, and I think you'll get good quality because you got to make sure you get the person on the other line to hear you well as well.
Great, thank you.
Okay, no problem.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Hey,
it's Marty.
Hey, Marty, how are you?
Okay, okay. A couple of questions. Where's Gary, by the way? He's out of town?
Yes, he is. He's out of town. I think he's in Denver right now.
Oh, okay. I was trying to get in touch with him, but I'll text him. Question. You mentioned that the VAs are making a soft offer, right? Initially, your VAs.
They were. No longer.
Right. I'm just curious. Where did they get that information from? Was Steve giving them the numbers to make the offer?
Yeah. Steve would make the number. On certain instances, they would. You know, it just depends. In Miami, generally speaking, if the property the assessed value. If we could buy a property at assessed value, then that typically is a good deal. So sometimes the VAs, would throw the assessed value out there if they didn't have a number from Steve. But generally, Steve was giving them the number in order for them to make a in order for them to make a soft offer.
You wouldn't go below the assessed value to make an offer. In other words, a fix and flip guy, he's happy to purchase it higher than the assessed value in Florida?
Yeah, most of the time properties go for above assessed value here.
Okay.
Yeah. So for your area, every area is different. And here we can use assessed value as a barometer. The other thing is this, as per my previous conversation with Brenda, a lot of our deals that we do down here are cash flow properties. So more often than not, they can do a quick calculation and get like a gross ROI of 25% or something like that, and they can throw a number based on rent at that amount, and we'll be safe, you know. The issue was not the numbers the issue was not that they were throwing bad numbers, but just the conversation in general with them. Was not where I thought it would needed to be in order to get a seller, to build rapport, get them over the hump, and to try to have a chance of us striking a deal with them.
Your cash flow properties are single family homes, right?
Single family homes or duplex, triplex, or quads, but most of the time they're either duplexes or single family houses.
Okay. I mean, theoretically, I can make the same offers here to some potential landlords where I could show them that cash on cash is a way to buy. But okay, let me ask you another question. I'm currently sending out some pre-sales, and I'm a little bit I want to work faster than that. So my question to you is, have you thought about sending a pre-sale by email? Because I sent out a pre-sale to one guy. He still has not received it. I'm anxious to go forward, and I said to him, listen, what's your email address? And I'm thinking about just emailing him the pre-sale. What do you think about that?
I don't see an issue with it. I mean, I would say is that it has to be convenient for them, right? So,
okay.
So what I mean by that is that, and the sellers that we deal with are elderly, and many of them struggle with a computer. So what I don't want to do is I don't want to send them an email, and then now they got to, I called them up and said, no, I'm not good with a computer. My nephew has to come and print it for me, and then now they have to go through this whole, this whole obstacle course just to be able to do the contract. And so I'd rather than send them paper, because I know that they can handle the papers.
Okay. I see.
So it has to be whatever is convenient for them is the optimal way to do it. Make it easy for them, even if it's a little bit more difficult for you.
Okay. Another thing is I have a property that I approached a buyer and he's interested. And, he's looking for more information. I don't have a signed agreement yet. And I'm just thinking, what do you feel about that? In other words, he would like to get the address to do some comps to see if it's a nice deal. Is that me or you making the noise? I kind of know the guy. I mean, it would be embarrassing, I guess, for him to steal the deal from me because we know familiar people. So do you think it's safe enough to just give him the information even though I don't have a signed contract yet? What do you think?
Well, It just depends. It really comes down to trust, you know. And we've done that before. Generally, whenever we do that, it's because we're really not sure and we don't want to take a chance on putting it on the contract until we have somebody else's input. However, on our side, you know, we don't lose anything by putting something on the contract. So more often than not, we prefer to just put it on the contract, and once we have the deal, then at that point, then we'll talk to somebody about it. The only difference would be is if it's a deal that you're really having a tough time and comping, and this guy, you know, he buys in that area, and then he can give you a solid price that you can then work your way from there and then talk to the seller. That might be another reason, but we generally try to avoid doing that. We just try and put it on the contract first and then come to the buyer. Because what also happens is that if you send the buyer to the deal and you haven't really tied it up, then you kind of feel obligated to kind of work something out with him, even if it's to your disadvantage, or he kind of feels that maybe he did you a favor, so you got to do him a favor. I like the position of having it in the contract, and now I don't owe anybody any favors. If you want the deal, you can have it. If not, then I'll pitch it to somebody else. So that's the other reason I try and not do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. Let me see. Who is? I have an anonymous. I'm going to select you, and I think whoever you are, I unmuted everybody by mistake, but I'll unmute you guys back. But there, whoever you, it's an anonymous number. I think you raised your hand. Can you hear me?
Chris, it's Justin.
Justin, anonymous. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I had to unmute there. Sorry. Not sure why it's showing up as an anonymous, but we'll blame it on Vonage. Couple things. Number one, is it possible, you know, when we sell out the pre-sell and then it tags us with a task to follow up with that seller, whatever it is, 2 weeks out or whatever it is. So two things, it would be great if you guys had some maybe training, scripts, pointers on some effective ways of how to talk to the people other than, hey, I'm the douchebag who offered you $100,000 less than what you asked for when we called them up.
Yeah, go ahead.
And the other thing that relates to that is more about functionality. It would be great if when it tasks that to us, you could also program the functionality to set the reminder or the alarm in Podio so it pops up and it says, hey, remember, you're supposed to call back Sally Jones today and talk to her about the offer you mailed her 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think the alarm in Podio goes off if you put a time in there, right?
Okay.
So I don't
so
know
could
if
we maybe reprogram that to set a default time? It would be just convenient. Otherwise, you know, it's just all about having to go into the tasks and.
Yeah, I don't.
Nice
I don't
get that.
Yeah, I don't know if I have to look, but I don't know. And
okay.
I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure about that. As a general rule of thumb, what we've done is we train our guy just to always be looking at, you know, his task list, right? Because then you could segregate it by due date, and that's kind of his default. But I don't know. If you want to send,
right.
Gary would have to look at that. If that case, you know, the answer is I don't know. I don't know if we can
okay.
granularly set it for the time.
Okay.
The one thing I found when listening to the calls to the VAs, though, when they were calling the sellers back from the pre-sale, you know, the thing that they said, which actually I was surprised that they said it that way, but the sellers weren't, you know, just open as a dialogue. Is that, hey, this is Chris, and I was just following up on the offer I sent you. I was looking to see if you're, you know, wondering if you're ready to move forward now with the deal. Or forward with selling the property. So you're not asking them, I wouldn't ask them directly, like, hey, did you get my offer? What do you think of it? I wouldn't ask them that way. It would almost be assumptive that, hey, just looking to see if you're looking to move forward with selling your property. And then have them tell you, you know, hey, you know, it's too low. And, you know, as I was listening to the call, some sellers were, you get the sellers that say, are you crazy? I got that. I threw it right in the garbage the minute I got it. And some sellers, you know, they were able to get on the phone and have a dialogue and a back and forth. And they said, no, that's not going to work. But if you could do this, maybe we can work something out. And so I just think that approaching them with a very neutral entry so that you're not, I wouldn't ask him, like, hey, what do you think about the offer? Because it insinuates
okay.
that there's something, you know what I mean?
Okay. Okay, cool. That makes sense. And then the other thing is, I'm talking to a few people lately who've got multiple properties for sale.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to clone an item in Podio so I can separate. What I don't know is when I clone it and then I want to do a pre-sell, that it's going to reference the correct address in the pre-sell. I don't know, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Because there's a couple issues there. Because if, let's say there's property one, property A, and then now he also wants to sell property BCD. So property A
right.
may exist in the in our database, but he may have properties BCD, and now those are not in existence. So actually for BCD,
correct.
We have to then create those inside. I have to make a note and then have a discussion with Gary about that.
Okay. That's happened to me twice in the last week, and obviously, you know, it's holding up me sending out pre-sales to the gentleman. So do you want me to, do I need to put this in, like, send this to suggestion box, or are you making a note? Or?
No, you know, what would be great for me is if you just write that and then the support, but then CC me on that one specifically. And
then you want me to put the actual tag, the actual lead in Podio when I put in the support?
Yeah. Because
okay.
I think what will have to happen is we can definitely do it. As far as getting that done, it would be a problem. But because I think we're doing that for a few other people. Gary has fixed that issue or resolved that with a few other people. So I think if you
okay.
just do that, then Gary will respond. Because that's a common item where people want
okay,
to mail
cool.
to someone that's not in existence in the database.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. That was it.
All right, buddy.
I'll mute myself
okay.
back up.
Perfect.
Thanks.
Hey, guys, the line is open back up for any questions, comments, or anything else that you'd like, guys like to chat about.
Hey, Chris, it's Brenda again.
Hey, Brenda.
Hey, I don't want to monopolize the whole call, but I did have one other question. It's actually about selling to investors. A lot of the calls that I've been getting are from guys who own these rental properties. So, you know, they know what their numbers are. They know, you know, what the comps say and everything. So they know how much their properties are worth. Do I come back? What kind of an offer do I come back to them with? Our discussion earlier, we talked about instead of basing my offer on the ARV, actually basing it on cash flow. So would I come back to them with that same type of offer based on the cash flow, or how would I come back to these guys? Because they know what they're doing, you know?
Well, I mean, I'll say a couple things. Number one is that the two types of sellers that we deal with, right, I want to make a comment about the two types of sellers that we deal with. Is the type of seller that has one property, and the type of seller that has more than one property. So generally, like in our scenario in Miami, we have our best luck is with a seller that has typically one property, or you know, or just maybe has a couple, not a guy that has 10 or 15. So the more properties they have, the more sophisticated, and the less likely they are to discount. Because generally speaking, we're looking for somebody that has deferred maintenance. And so a professional landlord, somebody that owns quite a bit of properties, they generally take care of them. They have a property manager, or they themselves will take care of making sure that there's no deferred maintenance. And so generally speaking, we always have better luck with the individual person that has, you know, a property, or maybe has two, but that's about it. As far as the offer is concerned, you know, there's two points on that. Is that number one is what is the ROI amount, I think. And so with that, you have to really – one of the things that I do, I don't know let me ask you this, on the other part of the question, are you trying to figure out, like, what it would be a good ROI to make them an offer at? Or tell me, just I want to make sure that I answer you, you know, the best way possible.
Well, without because I didn't know during my first discussions with these guys, I didn't know enough to find out how much they're getting in rent.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I wouldn't know what a good ROI would be for them. So, you know, I guess I'm just kind of, I sensed that they weren't very motivated. They were kind of like, yeah, make me an offer, you know. They have several rentals. They're buying and selling all the time. I just didn't know if it was even worth coming back to them with such a low offer.
Well, you know, I mean, it just depends. I would definitely say, I'll say a couple of things. You know, as far as finding the ROI number, one of the things that I do is, you know, many times I'll go into a Craigslist and I'll do a search in the county that I'm working in and I'll search for handyman, investor property, cash or hard money, those type of terms that would generally bring those type of properties up. And then I'll look and I'll glance to see if there's wholesalers or other people selling properties and see if they mention an ROI number, right, where the ROI is. That would give me an idea of what the ROI number would be. So that's number one. As far as whether or not you should make an offer to them, it just depends. You know, they're good to practice, perhaps. You know, people that let me ask you to hold on one second. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. I don't know if you heard the banging in the bathroom, but my kids came home from school and they were banging on the door like as if like those zombie movies where they're trying to bust through the door. So I had to ask them to please not to do that. It was quite distracting, so I was hard to ask you properly. So my apologies about that. So, you know, it just depends, you know. I mean, if you need the practice and you feel that, hey, you want to make offers just so that you can get better at it, certainly you would make offers to them. And a lot of times it's just, you know, whether or not, you know, I'm always looking for a situation. Now, I'm always looking for situations, right? So, you know, somebody might say, well, I'll sell it if I get a good offer. You know, I would just say, you know, Mr. Seller, I mean, it's just out of curiosity. I mean, if you've had this for a while, why would you sell it? You know, is it a good property? How is the tenant? And you try to unearth to see if there may be some other issues there that would cause that situation to unravel. But I would certainly call them back and I would say, hey, you know, I don't know how I missed it, but I forgot to ask you, you know, what were you getting in rent for the property? Now, if somebody says to you, well, I don't want to tell you that, because you get some people to say, I don't want to tell you what the rents are, that's none of my business. I say, you know, Mr. Seller, I want to be able to, you know, make you an offer or at least analyze the property and see if it works for me. And one of the reasons I'm buying a property is because, you know, we're looking for properties just like yours that have a rental income. And so the only way for me to really evaluate that property is I need to be able to know those numbers. And I could, you know, whatever information stays with me, whatever information you tell me stays with me, it's just for me and my own purposes and our conversation here. And if they still say, no, I'm not going to tell you, then those sellers generally don't even bother with, because if they're this difficult up front, then they're going to be continuing to be difficult throughout the whole transaction. But I'm always just looking to unearth what is there a situation there that would cause them issues with the property? You know, that maybe they have a problem tenant, maybe there's repairs needed, but they don't have enough money to fix it. But however, though, as much as you try, you will get those people that say, hey, if you make me an offer, I'll take it. And, you know, those people, we get those people all the time as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Chris.
No, you're welcome. Thank you. Great question. All right, guys, I have the continuing to keep the line open. I want to just make a note of two things. If you guys go to ariagold.com/start, which actually we're redoing that page. But if you scroll down on that page on ariagold.com/start, There's a section in red called handling seller leads. And the handling seller leads, there's a link there, which once you click on that link, it'll send you to the membership area again. You have to log in. But there's one called on Steve's call on positioning yourself as a company versus an individual investor. That call, I think everybody should listen to. It's a great call on how to really position yourself so that you're not an adversary to the seller, but you're rather someone there to try to help them and to try to see if you could help kind of bridge the gap between what your company wants to buy versus what they're looking to sell. And it's an approach that I think many people that I've spoken with who take that approach find it to be a lot easier to deal with sellers and maybe make some lowball offers and not get that pushback from the seller. So again, if you scroll down to where it says handling seller calls, then the third link says Steve's call on positioning yourself as a company versus an individual investor. That's a great call. And then actually, if you go to the one right below that, the other section is called property analysis training. And on the property analysis training, there's a link. The third link says how to determine offers on rental properties. And that's the call that I discuss on our approach to making offers based on ROI. And, you know, that also is dependent on market. You know, Gary and I thought hopefully next week we'll finally close that deal we were working on in California for God knows how long. And, you know, that's a house that I don't care how you slice it, it don't cash flow. I mean, so we can't use that approach. We couldn't use that approach on that property. And so, yeah, it, depending on your market, depending on the area, depending on the property, you may not use it. So part of it is understanding the dynamics in your market. And if you're in a mostly cash flow market or cash flow area, then obviously making offers based on ROI makes a lot of sense. But those two calls I would definitely say are important to go through because they really lay out, you know, give you some tips on how to make those calls with the seller much better and how to help you make those offers easier. All right, so if anybody has a question or comment, the one last thing I was going to say is that a lot of you emailed in for Gary to set you up last week for our beta group for the text messaging, and we've been rolling that out and getting that implemented. We have to do each person individually, and as we, you know, so just bear with us, but if you've sent it an email already, you're in the queue, and we've been working through that. We're really excited about that, and once we get that done, we're working on some other functionality inside of Podio to just make things a lot easier for you guys and more efficient. And so as we continue to, we always test those internally, make sure it works, make sure we don't break anything, and then we offer to roll it out incrementally and then finally to everybody in the group. So if anybody sent in that email, then we'll get you, Gary's working through that. He was delayed because he was out of town, but he's continuing to work with that. Let me see.
Hey, Chris?
Yes. Is this Atlanta?
Yeah, this is Eamon.
Oh, hey, Eamon. How are you?
Good. Yourself? Quick question. Been coming across some over-leveraged properties and been going through some past huddle calls, and I know you guys have said to kind of stay away. But for a realtor referral, I was wondering how that would work. Would this person pay you off of just based off one conversation, or would you have to wait until it closed so it's like it could be, you know, years down the line potentially? I was wondering if there's any kind of best practice as far as realtor referrals, especially short sale referrals, go.
Well, I'll make a couple comments, especially with short sales. So I'll make two comments. One is about how to do it, how my experience with that has been, and then also I'm going to tackle a legal issue also about that. Number one, as far as, you know, typically it's a referral fee. So typically realtors are used to paying a referral fee of 20%. And what they will do is that however that is only payable at closing. So in the instance of a short sale, you know, you could be talking about, you know, 6 or 8 months until however long it, you know, however long it takes for them to go through the process and get it, you know, get the short sale approved and get the property sold, et cetera, et cetera. Now, so aside from that, though, however, there's also a legal issue is that in most states, a realtor is not allowed to pay a referral fee to an unlicensed person. So, you know, in that instance, if you, we don't do that much that often, but we were, I guess we lost a realtor that we had, but unlicensed, and so I was referring people, the leads that we were not doing anything with, or that potentially were over leveraged, and we were getting a referral fee back, but I have my license, and so therefore it is legal for me to receive that.
Do you have to be licensed in that state, or do you just have a license in the country?
You know, that's a good question. I think that you generally have to be licensed. You have to be licensed in that state. However, if you have a real estate license in another state, I think there's reciprocity among all the states, and so I think you should be able to collect that fee. You have to do a little bit of digging.
Calling you.
Damon.
Good. You remember me?
Who's this?
Yeah, cool. We've never done any business.
No, hold on. This is
the first one we can do.
Can you hear me, Justin?
Cool. What do we mean? I mean, we've evaluated it on paper.
Hold on.
Paper works for us, so it's just the formality of getting in there.
Okay. I'm going to find Justin. Okay, that was Justin. He violated the rule.
I apologize.
I thought he was talking to you. Yeah, that's what I thought. Do you have a license, Eamon?
In California.
And so you gotta figure that out, because that's you don't want any issues with FRA, you know, with the real estate commission on that, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So aside from the legal issue, then it's typically it's a percentage of whatever the commission they collect, and it's payable at closing. You know, because they don't know if the deal is going to close or not, or how long it's going to take, et cetera. So the only way you can get around that is if you found someone, if you sold the lead, you know, versus a referral fee. That's the only potential way that you can get it out.
Would they pay for that previous to even meeting with the seller, and would they just kind of take your word for it? That's the part that I was a little unclear on.
You know, I've never done it that way, which is interesting. I don't, you know, it could be. I mean, just thinking about it, it could be that, you know, hey, I give you the lead, and if you, I guess you could do it a variety of different ways. But my gut feeling says, it probably would be where they would at least talk to the lead and say, yeah, this is something I'm going to be able to put on the contract and then work through, so I'll pay for the lead, you know, versus if they talk to a seller and they say, well, this guy's nuts. I can't deal with this. So there's no reason for them to pay for the lead. So maybe you might give them a little bit further, you know, further down as far as contact with the seller and making sure that they're happy with it, and then you can get paid for the lead, and then you're out of there, and they can do whatever they want.
All right. Thank you.
All right, no problem. All right, so we're approaching the hour, so one last call for any questions or comments. And again, if you need anything, you can always email in to us. But definitely, I would say, you know, one last thing I would say is that for those of you on the call, that it's you calling the sellers, that you don't have anybody else, it's just you. I think it is a great idea to record your calls still and listen to them, because you will find it shocking how you sound over the phone versus how you think. And, you know, a lot of times you get a really good perspective on just how you come across and how that conversation went. And I used to do that a lot. I used to always listen to my calls, picked up when I was doing too many ums or ahs, and maybe I said one word, you know, there was one word I kept on saying over and over again, and then I just noticed it when I actually listened to the call. So I think it's instructive to listen to the call. Other thing I would say as a caveat is I'm not an attorney, So be conscious of, you know, just be aware of the call, the laws regarding recording conversations in your neck of the woods. And, you know, obviously whatever you record are private conversations and you store it on your hard drive and nothing else comes of it. But just be aware of that. That's my disclaimer. My disclaimer is you should be aware of the calls, of the laws regulating recording of phone calls in your particular state. And I'll leave it at that. All right, well, it looks like I don't have any calls or questions. So, as always, guys, support@salesteamlive.com. Send us, you know, a ticket, whether it be mailing campaigns. Justin had a question about the text messaging and some additional questions he had about that. Anything like that, just send that in, and two or three of us usually see the ticket instantly. And then if you have a question about a deal, send it to dealhelp@ariagold.com, dealhelp@ariagold.com. And if you have any suggestions for us, anything we could do better or improve upon, you can send that to suggestionbox@ariagold.com, suggestionbox@ariagold.com. So I want to thank everybody for being on the call, and hope everybody has a great week, and look forward to rolling out even some additional features and additional bells and whistles over the next quarter so that you guys can be more effective and have more success with us. So thank you very much, and have a great day.